Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are strapping in for a pretty intense look at the global regulatory landscape.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not talking about laws that might get passed. We're looking at fixed, mandatory, and frankly, very expensive deadlines that are coming up fast.
Right. And the sources we're looking at all seem to use the same term for this 2026 forecast. They're calling it a regulatory avalanche.
That's the perfect term, isn't it? Because an avalanche isn't just a trickle.
No, it's multiple tons of pressure hitting all at once. So we've taken that comprehensive source material you shared, and the mission for this deep dive is pretty clear. We're going to dissect the next 18 months of global data privacy and AI regulation.
And the core thesis that jumped out from all the expert summaries really gives us a roadmap. It seems like 2025 was the year of, what do they call it, fragmentation and foundation.
Yeah, fragmentation and foundation, meaning that's when the laws were passed, the baselines were set across different continents.
But 2026 is where it gets real. It's the year of enforcement and AI integration. The grace periods are, for all intents and purposes, over.
That's the big shift. And that avalanche metaphor really captures what organizations are facing. It's not one new regulation to worry about.
Right.
It's these massive regimes. You've got the EU AI Act, India's DPDP, Australia's reforms, and this explosive U.S. federal policy shift. All of them are hitting their enforcement deadlines almost at the same time.
Which forces this dramatic, and I mean really dramatic, new mandate onto any organization that operates globally. You just can't rely on that old, simple checklist compliance anymore.
No, the pressure's too high, and the conflicts between the laws are just too complex now.
So what's the new mandate?
It's an imperative, really. The sources call it integrated AI and privacy governance. The only way to survive this convergence in 2026 is to pivot your entire operational strategy.
Okay, what does that mean in practice?
It means you have to treat AI usage as a fundamental privacy risk, one that requires, you know, real engineering controls. And you have to embed that privacy architecture right into your AI development lifecycle from day one.
So moving governance out of the legal department's office.
And putting it directly into the data science and engineering teams. That integration is, according to everything we've read, the central focus for survival.
Okay, so let's unpack all of this. To understand where we're going, I think we have to start by reviewing the fragmentation that really defined 2025. This was the year the global consensus on privacy just shattered.
Yeah. The crucial thing to get about 2025 is that it wasn't just about laws being passed. It was the year of operationalizing those new laws. The ink dried, and suddenly companies looked up and realized, oh, we can't just copy-paste our GDPR policy everywhere anymore.
And that operational reality immediately created these huge points of divergence across major economies.
Yes.
And I think the first major example of a country deliberately breaking from the model came from, maybe not surprisingly, the UK. After years of basically mirroring the EU, they started to actively untangle themselves.
Right, creating a clear two-track system.
So let's dive into the specifics. What was the Data Use and Access Act 2025, or DUAA?
So the DUAA, which got royal assent in 2025, is this textbook example of a government trying to, you know, spur innovation by performing some targeted regulatory surgery.
Okay.
On the surface, it looked like it was offering compliance relief. The government looked at the sheer volume of, paperwork required under the original GDPR.
You're talking about things like records of processing activities, the ROPAs. Yeah,
exactly, the ROPAs, which are these meticulous, incredibly resource-intensive documents for basically every single data activity.
A mandatory audit trail for everything you do with data.
They are. And the UK decided that for certain types of lower risk processing, you know, routine, non-sensitive data stuff, they could relax some of those OPA and data protection impact assessment burdens.
And they frame that as a simplification, right? To help startups and boost data innovation at home.
That was the narrative, yeah.
That sounds like great news for any company with a big compliance team. I mean, less paperwork is always a win. But you mentioned there was a heavy price. It wasn't a universal relaxation.
Not at all. That little administrative break came with a simultaneous and much more significant tightening in an area the EU was just starting to get its arms around. Automated decision making. The DUAA significantly tightened the rules and oversight requirements for any system involving automated processing that makes decisions about people.
So that's the divergence right there. They gave you a break on the compliance paperwork for the simple stuff, But at the same time, they impose stricter rules on the technology itself, specifically AI systems.
Precisely. And the operational impact of that is severe. Organizations now have to untangle two slightly but very functionally different compliance tracks.
Mm.
They still need their EU GDPR processes for the continent with all the strict ROPA requirements.
And for the UK.
For UK GDPR, they have a lighter documentation load, but a much heavier operational burden when they deploy AI models. So your compliance team is suddenly managing two different versions of the truth, making sure data flows are segregated by jurisdiction right from the start.
So while the UK's move was a careful surgical adjustment, the shift in the United States was more like a political and regulatory explosion.
It was a seismic event. And it happened on a very specific, very dramatic date that all the sources point to, December 11, 2025.
Okay, let's talk about the United States' December bombshell. Mm-hmm. What did President Trump's executive order, the one called Ensuring a National Policy Framework for Artificial Intelligence, actually do?
Well, it changed everything. I mean, the entire direction of U.S. policy. This EO immediately just superseded the previous administration's focus on safety, which was all about ethical guardrails, bias mitigation.
Right.
And it pivoted the entire federal narrative towards establishing a minimally burdensome national standard. The explicit goal was to ensure U.S. AI dominance by removing what they saw as regulatory drag. It wasn't about building safety nets. It was about maximizing speed.
And this is where the real engineering headache starts. Because this executive order didn't just set a new federal tone. It explicitly declared, and the sources call it this, a war on state laws.
Yes. It specifically targets the frameworks that compliance teams have spent years building for states like California and Colorado.
So how does it do that?
It treats the state patchwork, as they call it, of privacy and AI laws as a direct obstacle to interstate commerce and national security. The claim is that these different state regulations slow down the innovation needed to compete globally.
And crucially, this wasn't just political talk. There are real enforcement mechanisms in this EO, right? What's the key detail about the Department of Justice?
The AO mandates the creation of an AI litigation task force inside the DOJ. And this is not a study group, you know, it's a legal strike force. Its direct mandate is to use the Commerce Clause to sue states, especially those with tough privacy or AI bias laws, if the regulations are seen as impeding interstate commerce.
Or, and this is a key phrase, if they limit truthfulness in models through ideological filtering.
Exactly. This takes the whole preemption battle out of theory and puts it squarely into the federal court system, starting right away in 2026.
And that leads us directly to the big aha moment, the real operational crisis for any company.
Mm.
The Catch-22.
It's an impossible, immediate dilemma for companies, and it's one that engineers, not just the lawyers, have to solve. I mean, just think about the conflict.
Lay it out for us.
On one side, you have state laws like Colorado's AI law, which might mandate very specific bias audits and fairness metrics. They might require you to filter your AI's output to prevent historic discrimination. The goal is explicit anti-discrimination.
Okay, and on the other side?
On the other side, you have the new federal EO. It's driven by a philosophy of maximizing data access and minimizing restriction. And it actively penalizes and wants to litigate against what it labels ideological or DEI-based filtering.
So wait, if my company programs our AI model to specifically avoid, say, hiring recommendations that disproportionately screen out certain groups, which might be a requirement in Colorado,
then the federal task force could view that exact programmatic choice as ideological filtering that violates the principles of the EO.
That is a direct operational conflict. You have two different governments requiring two mutually exclusive things.
You do. You can't comply with both at the same time if you have one single national AI model. This fragmentation means a universal U.S. AI compliance model is, as of December 11, 2025, effectively obsolete. The legal risk is immense and immediate.
And while the U.S. was imploding into this internal fight, the rest of the world was busy solidifying its own foundations. What were the big moves in Asia and Europe in 2025?
Well, Asia was all about India. The Digital Personal Data Protection, DPDP, rules were finally notified in November 2025.
Which is a huge milestone.
Massive. Notification means the government has officially started the clock. So even though the law allows for a phased 18-month compliance deadline, that clock is now running. It demands immediate action from any global company that processes data of Indian citizens.
Because of its strict rules on consent and data localization, right?
Exactly. And meanwhile, in Europe, the focus really shifted. It sounds like they moved from, technical audits to more behavioral enforcement.
What does that mean, behavioral enforcement?
Well, GDPR enforcement really matured. Instead of those headline-grabbing fines for massive data breaches, which were often about technical failures, regulators started focusing on behavioral fines. They targeted what they called dark patterns.
Manipulative designs in cookie banners.
Right, or those really complex, obscure ways companies get consent for training their AI models. It was regulators signaling that they're moving past the letter of the law to prosecute the spirit of manipulation and the erosion of trust.
And then, almost silently, the groundwork was being laid for the 2026 storm with the EU AI Act.
Yeah, the very first provisions of the EU AI Act, specifically the bans on unacceptable risk AI, like social scoring or manipulative tech, those technically entered into force. This forced organizations to immediately start doing these comprehensive internal AI inventory audits.
So you had to figure out every AI system you were using, classify its risk level?
High, medium, low, and get all your documentation ready. Everyone knew the major deadlines were looming in 2026. So yeah, 2025 poured the foundation. 2026 is when the buildings have to be open for inspection.
So we leave 2025 with this global fragmentation just set in stone. The UK is different from the EU, the US is fundamentally different from both, and India is on its own fast track. Now let's pivot and look at the actual deadlines that make up this avalanche hitting everyone in 2026.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this section is all about fixed calendar dates. These are deadlines you can't move that carry massive, massive financial penalties and that require these huge, time-consuming infrastructure rebuilds. This is why that term avalanche really fits.
Mm-hmm. And we have to start with the most critical date on the global calendar. This is the one that should be circled in red for every CTO and CS out there. The EU AI Act High Risk Systems deadline.
And that date is?
August 2, 2026. This date triggers the full extensive compliance obligations for what they call high risk AI systems. If you build or deploy AI in the EU that falls into this category, you have to be fully compliant by this date, period. Or you face immediate catastrophic financial risk.
How broad is high risk? Were we just talking about like military drones or something?
Oh, it's far, far broader than that. The scope is enormous because it focuses on any system that impacts the fundamental rights and, life chances of people.
So things like HR software.
Exactly. AI used in human resources for recruitment, performance reviews, promotion decisions. We're talking about AI used for credit scoring, for university admissions, getting access to public services, and any component of critical infrastructure, energy grids, transportation, medical diagnostics.
So if your AI model is making a high-stakes decision about a person, it's probably high risk.
It's almost certainly high risk.
And what's the specific operational burden that hits on August 2nd, 2026? It sounds like it's a lot more than just signing a piece of paper.
It is a complete engineering overhaul, all focused on transparency and accountability. Organizations have to have three non-negotiable elements fully operational.
Okay, let's break those three down.
First, you need a fully documented Fundamental Rights Impact Assessment, or FRIA. And this isn't a one-time thing you write and forget. It's an ongoing process. It means consulting with stakeholders, running the system through these detailed risk scoring matrices, and showing you have a plan to mitigate those risks.
So it's proof that you designed the system ethically from the very beginning, not just bolting on some ethics features at the end.
That's it, exactly. The second element is rigorous data governance for your training data. You have to prove the provenance, the quality, and the statistical fitness of the data you use to train the model. This means comprehensive checks for bias and making sure any personal data was collected with the right legal basis.
And the third element deals with what happens after the model goes live.
That's the human oversight logging system. For any high-risk system, the model's decisions have to be traceable. If your automated system denies someone a loan or filters out their resume, there must be a clear, auditable trail proving that human review and intervention is built into the workflow.
So a human is always the ultimate decision maker.
And that human oversight has to be logged meticulously, proving you're meeting the post-deployment monitoring requirements.
And the consequence for missing that August 2nd deadline is... well, it's immense.
The fines are up to 35 million euros, or 7% of global annual turnover, whichever is higher.
7% of global turnover.
That's a threat level that demands boardroom attention. The EU is serious about making itself the global leader in AI rules, and you have to treat this deadline like a hard wall.
Okay, so at the same time Europe is setting this incredibly high bar, Asia is fundamentally changing how people can even assert their rights. Let's look at India's fast timeline for the DPDP Act Phase 2 and this idea of a consent manager.
Right. So while the final compliance deadline for everything is May 2027, the Indian government is focused on getting the infrastructure right first. And the crucial piece of that infrastructure, the consent manager framework, is expected to go live much, much sooner. The sources say likely by November 2026.
What exactly is a consent manager? And why is it so disruptive?
Well, right now, consent is just a relationship between the company collecting the data and the user. A consent manager introduces a third government-backed layer into that relationship. Think of it like a digital wallet for your privacy preferences, all mediated by a registered third party that's been approved by the Data Protection Board.
So instead of me clicking I accept on your website's cookie banner, I would just tell my consent manager my preferences once, and your system has to be able to securely receive that signal from them.
Precisely. It mandates a massive overhaul of all your existing consent systems. If you process data of any Indian citizen, it doesn't matter if your servers are in Mumbai or Manhattan, your systems have to be ready to accept consent signals from these third-party managers through a new API.
Which means a huge engineering project that has to start now, not in 2027.
You can't wait. The engineering work has to be done in 2026.
Okay, let's shift over to the Pacific. Australia has often been seen as, you know, a bit of a lighter touch jurisdiction, but it sounds like 2026 changes that completely.
Australia is signaling very, very clearly that it's moving from a soft to a punitive jurisdiction. After the first stage of reforms in 2025, 2026 is when the full weight of the new, dramatically increased penalty regime hits.
And this isn't just about bigger fines.
No, it's a deeper legal restructuring, which includes the introduction of a statutory tort for serious invasion of privacy.
And a statutory tort is the real legal game changer here. Explain that.
A statutory tort means that individuals who feel their privacy has been harmed can sue the company directly, even if there wasn't a data breach or a regulatory action. It dramatically lowers the bar for legal action and shifts the power away from just the regulator and into the hands of private law firms.
And the consequence of that shift is immediate.
You have to expect two things. First, much more aggressive enforcement and bigger fines from the OAIC, the Australian Information Commissioner. And second, a guaranteed explosion in privacy-related class actions from law firms that are now incentivized by this new tort. Treating Australian compliance as an afterthought is now a $5 or $10 million risk, at a minimum.
So we have three massive fixed deadlines. The EU AI Act on August 2nd, India's consent manager in November, Australia's new liability regime. That is a global storm. But we can't forget the year-long internal conflict brewing in the U.S., the preemption war.
Yeah, the U.S. situation isn't a single deadline. It's more like a year-long operational and legal siege. The December 2025 executive order immediately triggers these huge, complex lawsuits. You're going to see states like California and Colorado defending their strict consumer and anti-bias laws against the DOJ's new task force.
Which puts any company that operates nationally in this constant state of legal limbo.
It is an operational nightmare built on conflicting definitions. Like we said, you have this direct contradiction. Colorado requires fairness and bias auditing, and the federal EAO discourages what it calls ideological filtering. So companies have to hedge their bets.
You can't wait for the courts.
You can't wait 18 months for a Supreme Court ruling. You have to design systems in 2026 that can operate under two mutually exclusive legal regimes at the same time.
And what about that prediction that an injunction might pause some state enforcement by the second quarter of 2026? Could you rely on that?
You absolutely cannot build your strategy on a prediction, not even an educated one. You have to assume the highest risk profile, that both the aggressive state enforcement and the federal litigation risk are active all through 2026. Waiting for a judge is a compliance failure that just guarantees you'll have massive fragmentation debt later in the year.
The whole picture just screams that the solution isn't another legal memo. It's an engineering and data architecture solution. Which brings us to Section 3, focusing on what you can actually do about it. The sources are so clear on this. If you're still treating privacy compliance like a once-a-year legal review, you are going to fail in 2026. You have to shift to a war room strategy, treating this as a continuous data engineering and architecture challenge.
That transition is the absolute key to surviving the divergence. Only a really robust, agile data governance system can handle the conflicting demands from the EU for transparency, from India for geofencing, and from the US for deregulation. And this requires specific line item investments right now.
Okay, so what are the critical investments for 2026? Let's start with just tracking the AI models themselves.
The foundational investment has to be in an AI governance platform. The scale and speed of AI adoption, especially with LLMs, have made those old spreadsheet-based tracking methods completely obsolete.
And why is a platform necessary? Is it just for inventory?
No, it's because of what the sources call shadow AI. You have employees everywhere rapidly adopting unapproved cloud-based tools for their daily tasks, summarizing documents, generating code. And those tools are handling sensitive company data, and they might be creating outputs that fall under the EU AI Act's high-risk category, all without any formal compliance review. A platform has to give you automated, real-time tracking of every AI tool on your network, link its usage to a regulatory risk profile, and create an automated audit trail for that human oversight logging.
You need to know what you're using, where it is, and what rules it breaks instantly.
Instantly.
Okay, next up is consent. The old cookie pop-ups are clearly not going to cut it with Europe's new behavioral fines or India's complex requirements.
No, which is why a significant budget has to go to consent mode V2 and global privacy control GPC implementation. The whole industry is moving away from that dying browser-based tracking towards more sophisticated server-side tracking. You have to invest in migrating your consent logic from the fragile client-side to a robust server-side architecture.
And what does shifting to the server-side enable you to do?
It enables much more reliable and sophisticated management of these advanced signals, like Google Consent Mode V2 or the GPC standard, which let users express a global opt-out preference. This infrastructure investment is essential for demonstrating compliance against the EU's crackdown on dark patterns, and crucially, it gets you ready to integrate with India's upcoming Consent Manager API.
Okay, the next item I see is a really fundamental shift in how you prepare data for AI training. PTTs, or privacy-enhancing technologies. And the source material makes this striking claim that using real customer data for AI training will be deemed legally toxic in 2026. Why such strong language?
It's because of the incredible risk associated with the EU AI Act's data governance rules. If your high-risk model is found to be biased or non-compliant, the very first thing regulators will demand to see is the training data provenance.
And if you can't prove the entire lineage of every piece of training data, the financial exposure is just massive.
It is. So training a model on real sensitive personal data just carries this inherent legal risk. That data might have subtle biases or be subject to jurisdictional rules like the right to be forgotten.
So the move is towards synthetic data.
Strategic investment in synthetic data generation becomes a compliance mandate, not just some R&D project. You create data sets that statistically mimic real customer data, capturing all its characteristics, but without the legally identifiable footprints of actual people. You de-risk the entire AI development pipeline.
But isn't synthetic data less accurate? I can just hear a data science team pushing back, saying they're trading performance for legal safety. That seems like a tough sell.
It is a tough sell, but the cost-risk analysis makes the choice really clear. The potential cost of a 7% global turnover fine or a massive class action lawsuit from biased training data, it just dramatically outweighs the investment in advanced PETs. The trade-off in 2026 is no longer performance versus cost. It's performance versus existential legal risk. And the sources show the smart companies are already choosing legal safety.
And finally, the human element, training. And this isn't just about making people watch a compliance video once a year anymore.
No, you need deep, ongoing training in AI literacy for all staff. It's actually a specific requirement under the EU AI Act. Staff need to be trained on when they're using an AI system, how to interpret its output, and critically, how to spot and correct errors, biases, or weird behaviors.
Because if your employees can't do that, the entire compliance system you've built is basically meaningless.
It's indefensible.
So those are the investments. Now let's talk about the big strategic decisions, especially around managing that U.S. conflict. We know you can't build one universal system anymore.
Which leads to the single most important operational strategy, given the legal mess in the U.S. model segregation. Organizations have to plan, budget for, and execute the maintenance of two distinct computational environments.
Describe what that segregation looks like.
You maintain a distinct global model, one that's engineered to the high watermark of GDPR and the EU AI Act. It has the FRIAs, the strict data provenance, the human oversight logging. And then you maintain a completely separate US model, one that's optimized specifically for the new federal executive orders mandates, focusing on speed and minimizing any filtering that the DOJ could call ideological.
That sounds incredibly resource intensive, maintaining two separate models. Why is merging them such a high legal risk?
Because the requirements are mutually exclusive on some of these ethical and filtering issues. Trying to merge a model built for strict European data minimization and anti-discrimination with a model built for American federal speed and anti-censorship just creates an unmanageable level of legal ambiguity.
So by segregating them, you contain the legal risk.
You contain it. If one model gets sued in Colorado, your global model is still compliant and operational in Europe and Asia.
It's inefficient, but the alternative is a legal catastrophe.
Right. And that leads to the second critical to do, which is a defensive move, auditing your DEI algorithms.
This is where politics and data science collide head on.
Absolutely. Under the new USEO, the DOJ task force is looking for any guardrails that restrict content based on what they deem ideological criteria. So you have to do a meticulous review of any AI guardrail you've put in place to mitigate bias or promote fairness.
And it's not just about what the code does, but how you document why it does it.
Exactly. The engineering team has to make sure the intent and the documentation for these filters are strictly defined as allowed safety measures. You know, preventing physical harm, illegal content, harassment, rather than being vaguely targeted ideological filters. Your documentation becomes your primary defense in court.
And a final quick reminder on preparing for India.
Yeah, the infrastructure for India requires moving early. To get ready for inspections by their data protection board and manage local data requirements, every global organization with a significant Indian user base needs to appoint a local representative in India by Q1 2026. It's a foundational step you have to take now.
Okay, this brings us to the final section, where we tackle the really hard questions and the strategic traps that organizations absolutely have to avoid in 2026.
So the most immediate legal panic coming out of that December 2025 U.S. executive order has to be addressed first, handling the U.S. federal versus state conflict.
And the question being asked in every boardroom right now is, does this new executive order, with its focus on deregulation, mean we can just ignore California's CBPA and Colorado's CPA? Can we just stop worrying about them?
The answer is an unambiguous, legally grounded NO, absolutely not. An executive order directs federal agencies. It does not have the power to just automatically invalidate existing state law.
So those state laws are still fully in effect?
Fully enforceable until a court, and we're likely talking the Supreme Court rules, that the federal interest in AI dominance explicitly preempts those state laws under the Commerce Clause.
And until that ruling comes down, what's the risk?
The risk is immediate, and it is massive. If you stop complying with California law today, the CPCA, their privacy agency, will fine you, and you'll have to pay those fines, potentially millions of dollars, long before the federal preemption case is ever settled. State compliance is mandatory until a judge tells you otherwise.
Which means you still have to design for the stricter standard, even while the U.S. government is pushing for deregulation. This leads to the next big strategic choice. How do you handle the conflict between the strict EU AI Act and the deregulatory U.S. stance?
You have to follow the high watermark strategy. This means organizations have to commit to treating the EU AI Act with its requirements for FRIAs, human oversight, data provenance, as the default global engineering standard.
And why is building for the highest standard the most efficient choice in the long run?
Because compliance is additive. It is so much easier and so much cheaper to version down for the deregulated U.S. market, meaning you can strip out some compliance components, reduce documentation, speed up deployment, than it is to try and bolt on those safety features later.
Right.
Trying to integrate a fundamental rights impact assessment system and data lineage tracing after your product is already launched in the U.S. and has a huge user base is a multi-million dollar, months-long nightmare. Building safe from the start means you build reusable compliance architecture.
I want to challenge that a little bit. If the U.S. market is all about speed, doesn't the high watermark strategy just make your U.S. teams slower and less competitive by making them follow rules that don't even exist here?
It does introduce friction, yes, but friction in the engineering phase is way cheaper than friction in the litigation phase. The sources are really consistent on this. The speed advantage you get by building a non-compliant model is quickly wiped out by the delay and cost you incur when that model gets audited or subpoenaed or fined in an overseas market.
Or even just challenged by a state attorney general here in the U.S.
Exactly. And by using segregated models, you let the U.S. focus model deploy faster while it still inherits the robust security and governance frameworks you built for the global one. It leads to faster, safe deployment.
Okay, let's talk about a casualty of this new U.S. policy shift. We used to hear a lot about U.S. safety guidelines. What happened to the U.S. AI Bill of Rights after the December EO? Is that still relevant?
Effectively, the U.S. AI Bill of Rights is dead. It was a non-binding guidance document from the previous administration focused on ethics and safety. It is completely superseded by the new executive order's focus on innovation and deregulation.
So what's the action item for compliance teams?
You need to immediately review all of your external compliance statements, your white papers, everything. Any reference to that old Bill of Rights guidance has to be removed immediately to align with the new federal posture. Relying on that outdated guidance could actually make you a target for the DOJ's litigation task force.
Finally, let's talk about the biggest trap of all for executives in 2026, the cost of inaction, the wait-and-see approach. What is the financial risk if a company just decides to delay everything while they wait for the courts to sort out the U.S. conflict?
The risk is what the sources quantify as fragmentation debt. If you pause mobilization, you will inevitably build new products and data pipelines in the first half of 2026 without integrating the necessary governance controls, especially for that fixed August deadline for the EU AI Act.
And what does that debt look like on the balance sheet?
It means that every single product you launch during that period of inaction is going to require a costly, painful emergency rebuild by the third quarter of 2026 to avoid those massive fines. The research gives a really crucial ratio here. The cost of retrofitting compliance into a product that's already deployed is reliably 10 times the cost of designing for it from the start.
So waiting isn't saving money.
Waiting is a guarantee of massive emergency spending later in the year, along with the very real risk of being legally locked out of the European or Indian markets entirely.
The lesson is so clear. These fixed global deadlines require action now, regardless of the political winds in the U.S. The time to engineer the solution is before the deadline, not after. #tagoutro. And that brings us to our conclusion. We have definitively entered the era of strategic divergence. That comfortable logic from the last 5 years, you know, the idea that GDPR compliance gets us 80% of the way there globally, that is completely obsolete in 2026.
A single unified global privacy policy is now a legal impossibility. And the reality is that a single approach built to satisfy everyone will end up failing everywhere. If you build only for the strict safety-focused standards of the EU and Asia, you're probably too slow and risk-averse for the deregulated U.S. market.
But if you build only for the new U.S. federal standards focus on speed, you will be legally locked out of the world's other major economies by huge fines and immediate enforcement.
Exactly.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? The solution to this unprecedented global divergence is fundamentally not found in drafting more legal policies or hiring more lawyers to argue about it. It is found in better engineering.
Absolutely. The survival strategy for 2026 relies completely on sophisticated, agile data infrastructure. The organizations that are going to thrive will be the ones making early, aggressive investments in data provenance tracking, in advanced geofencing to manage conflicting data residency laws, and in modern consent signaling infrastructure.
These engineering solutions are the only practical way to manage these conflicting legal realities at a global scale.
They are the agility mechanism. They're what allows for that model segregation and risk containment we talked about.
And that is such a crucial point to leave you with. Administrations and laws are always going to change. The U.S. will shift its regulatory focus every few years. The U.K. will continue to untangle itself from the EU. But the fundamental customer and public demand for transparency and trust, that does not change.
Indeed. And the organizations that really get that, the ones who treat data ethics and responsible AI not just as a regulatory burden, but as a core value that guides their engineering teams, they will be the ones who navigate the 2026 avalanche successfully. By prioritizing that governance and trust over short-term compliance fixes, they secure a long-term reputation advantage that will last much longer than any political or legislative cycle.